Yeah, you may remember. Are you recording it?
Yep, I just started, so okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, you may remember my letter to you was kind of full of details about a strange life.
Yes.
And usually you start off these things with, so tell us about yourself, but I'm a little leery of doing that because we wouldn't then get into talking about what I was hoping to talk about more was just exchanging views about this moment in time, as far as, you know, like Peterson and, you know, the different kinds of things going on, not so much politically, but just the opportunities that this moment has for us. And it's something I've been watching for a while. But yeah, if I start talking about my life, I mean, I will eventually leak stuff out, but it would be a very long story. So.
Well, you know, we'll have to talk again because the stuff you had in that email is well worth talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of this starts from, I mean, my interest in Peterson is in some way connected. I remember you did a video where you were talking about, you'd mentioned something, someone mentioned something about Francis Schaeffer and LaBrie, yes. And you were kind of like, oh yeah, they do. Does anyone remember that place? And I was like, yeah, I was there a couple months ago and giving lectures there as well.
Oh really?
Yeah, I gave, what did I do lectures on this time? I did one kind of inspired by Roger Scruton's work. I read his book on beauty. And so I did a lecture on beauty and the need for it in our society. And I think the church in particular really needs it. Ken Myers, you must know the Mars Hill Audio.
Yep.
Yeah, he did a lecture once where he's talking about, you know, there are plenty of Christian artists now, but you don't see that reflected in the actual insides of the church.
Yes.
You know, it's like everyone's told, yeah, go work in graphic design, go, be an artist, maybe get a gallery show. But, you know, you walk inside the church. I was in this little church in Alaska. It's like you walk inside these little, like, you know, quilted things, felt and whatnot on the wall. You know, the kind of, you understand. It's
understand
a strange kind of culture. And it's hard, you know, and people walk in and it's just like, it's hard. And here I am in Georgia, the country, not the state. Like people was, yeah, I worked in Alaska this summer taking people on tours to see bears, among other things. But before I would start, it's a long story. Before I would start, I would tell people, where are you from? People would say, like, you know, I'm from Boston. Someone would say, I'm from Georgia. And I go, really? I was just in Georgia. And they go, like, where? I go, like, Tbilisi. And they would look at me like what they're going like, is that near Macon or that's somewhere between Athens and Atlanta? I go, like, no, it's actually the other Georgia. And then they go, Russia. And I go, no, it's not Russia. Don't call them Russians. They don't speak a language at all related to Russia or anything else. And it's the learning Georgian, or Kartuli, as it's really called, is one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Wow.
Because they have sounds like this. That's one of the consonants. Anyway, so where were we?
LaBrie, because one of the things, so it's been amazing how often Francis Schaeffer and LaBrie has come of this. So I was just in Australia, and my host in Australia, Warren Mills, who wrote a book that I'll talk about with him at some point, talking to him, and he's talking about he and his wife when they were at LaBrie. I'm like, wait a minute, Ron Dart, you, Warren, how many of these things can go through LaBrie?
Right. Well, I was there originally in 1978, and I arrived there just after Schaeffer had been diagnosed with lymphoma. Oh. They just wrapped up the Whatever Happened to the Human Race documentary series, and they were going to take it around about a year later. So they had filmed it, and then they had noticed that he had a big lump under his arm, and they got him to the Mayo Clinic. And I felt at that time, eventually he came back. He went into remission for a while. He didn't pass away until about, 84, I believe. But he came back, and I did eventually meet him and had a chance to talk with him a little bit. when I arrived there in 78, I had felt like there had been a massive fire of something that had really happened. And I was coming along the embers. It was still burning.
Yeah.
But I was there at the tail end of it.
Yeah.
And, and that really, I was coming out of this Jesus People group that had then kind of turned into a cultish form of the same experience, going through the charismatic movement into a thing called the shepherding movement, which was very much like everyone report to people higher up from you, linking all these churches together in the charismatic movement.
Huh.
And I got out of that by reading C.S. Lewis, because no one could criticize me for reading C.S. Lewis. What they didn't realize is if you keep going with Lewis, you go past the Chronicles of Narnia, past Mere Christianity, past the science fiction novels, and suddenly you're in all his literary criticism. And I, when people ask me what my favorite C.S. Lewis book, to this day, I say The Discarded Image. I mean, I really like A Grief Observed, and I've read almost everything by Lewis.
Yeah.
But The Discarded Image was about the view we have of the world and how our model cannot be correct and how no model is correct, but our model in particular, which was at that time when he was writing, was the modernist model.
Right.
But he was getting ready for it. You could just see Lewis, he would have, you know, bring on the postmoderns, you know, he would have been ready for it. So, but then LaBrie went through kind of a dark period, particularly around the time of Schaefer's death. Mm-hmm. I won't go into all the internal politics of the thing, but I know it quite well. I didn't get back there till 87. And then I kept going, like, it was 87, then 93, 96, 2000, 2005, 2012, 2016, 2017, and 2018.
Okay.
And each time I gave a few lectures. I started giving lectures. I was there almost a year because I was in this group and I couldn't go back to the group. And so I just was like, and I wasn't even a part of LaBrie. I just stayed in the area and started working on this idea I had about what had happened to music and why that changed. That's a big, big, big issue, which I'm going to put that on the shelf with all the other stuff that I'm not going to get into a whole lot. I decided I have so much stuff that I've been experienced, studied, and so little of it has come out. I have a website, The Anadromous Life, and I don't know if you've had a look at that, but over there, in fact, I just culled a video of yours and put it on there. My most recent one, are you looking at that?
I'm looking it up, yeah. There's a YouTube by that.
There's a YouTube channel which has various videos, including a couple of LaBrie lectures I've done there.
Okay.
There's a essay site. I don't call it a blog site because I don't write about what I had for breakfast, you know. But but there's on the most recent one, which I just put up a couple of days ago, I've been doing a series on 21st century propaganda.
Okay, I found
it. And it's like, how do we get our information without getting just spoon-fed propaganda, since so much of our communication these days is propaganda.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I talk about is all the people in the last couple of essays in this series, I talk about all the people who have in one way or another are contributing to the conversation today from different perspectives and how they are not part of the mainstream. The mainstream seems to be in some sort of like nightmarish meltdown where they are just, it's like, you know, we just keep getting Marvel movies and Star Wars movies. We keep, you know, everyone seems to be addicted to some sort of games. There was a guy who wrote a book a couple of years ago, The Juvenilization of American Christianity or something like that, of the church, and how we become these like younger people. But anyway, my thought was, it's interesting what's going on, and I really, someone else pointed this out in one of your conversations, that the valuable service you're doing by allowing other people to interact, you know, and they're not always people you agree with everything on, but it's about a conversation. And one thing I pointed out in the recent essay is I said, you know, there's a world of difference between Camille Paglia praising drag queens and Paul Vanderclay's Christian Ideas. But I think they could sit down and have a great conversation.
Yeah. And I'm sure we can.
You can't say that about what's going on in the mainstream media that much. It's kind of like we've reached this point where everyone's doing sound bites. One of the great things that Peterson has pointed out along with other people is that people are watching 2.5 hour videos. You hit those Sam Harris, Jordan Peterson lectures, they got millions of views. And they're, someone said to me the other day, oh, what I was telling you is I'm going to start another YouTube channel called The Anadromist. That's me. And it means going against the stream. It's a term in biology to describe salmon going up the stream. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's that that's what we're doing. We're going back up the stream, going home. I've decided I'm just going to do these kind of face-to-face discussions of ideas, and I've got two recorded already. I'm going to wait till I have about three or four ready so I can just start putting them down. But it just struck me as like, okay, I've been sitting on stuff quite a while. I've been working on ideas since the late 70s, mm-hmm. very seriously, mm-hmm. and I've not wanted to do cheap, fast, like the temptation to do a Christian book on rock music would, you know, it's there. And it would have been like terrible, you know, just like, you know, why did, you know, or anything like that. One of the things is I met one of my friends at Labrie is John Sandry, who was Francis Schaeffer's son-in-law. And he, when I was first met him, sorry, touched a heater here. When I first met him, in 1978, he had been working for like 15 years on his approach to biblical studies and how to approach the text. And I thought to myself, and he's still working on it. I mean, wow. and he's like 80 something now. And I said to myself, everyone I'd met prior to that wanted their quick spoonful of truth. You know, they wanted, there was a phrase, that someone came up with in the middle of the 70s to describe the Jesus people in the charismatic movement as it was developed. They were like truth junkies. And what that meant was they just wanted this, you know, every so long, often a new nugget of truth would come along. And then people would jump on it. And then they'd be waiting for the next one, you know. So whether it was like demon possession or involvement in politics or, you know, like mining this stuff out of the Bible. But it would just be these quick passing fads really within Christianity. But I decided upon seeing my friend John Sandry, whom I have a couple of interviews with on my Anadromous Life YouTube site. I decided that, I'm going to work on music and why culture has changed so much and get down with a shovel and spade and dig. And try to find out what really happened and not make it so that I please the Christian audience who, as a friend of mine once reminded me, Bernd, don't forget Christians are humans too. I said, you're right. You got it.
They deserve it.
Sometimes it's, so I've been working on trying to understand why music changed so much in the 20th century. That's been my big one. A second one has been film and media history. A third one has been this weird thing of puppetry. People are going, why are you talking about puppets? and my response is because essentially film and music were the big arts of the 20th century, but they are both now...
Yes.
Down on the screen. Yes. And everything is the screen.
Yes.
And
yes.
What we need is reality.
Yes.
And the thing about puppets, that most people in America, you say puppets, everyone goes Muppets. It's like, it's for kids. And I have proved them wrong. But I've found by going through Europe, puppet theaters here, particularly the ones behind the Iron Curtain, that it's just something, it's like, oh, it's tactile. It's not digital. It's something, even the really best puppet movies are tactile. They have a lot of texture in them. And when I interview, I've got over 30 hours of interviews with puppeteers in Europe, some, many from the older folks from behind the Iron Curtain. And as soon as I say, well, what's the point of doing puppetry in the 21st century when you can just download entertainment like that? You can get online, you can play a video game, you can watch a movie, you can listen to anything. What's the point? And they all say the same thing. It's about what you can touch. We're losing our things. We're losing our stuff. Which dovetails into another important interest of mine, which relates to Dr. Hans Rookmacher, or Rookmacher.
Yes, the Dutchman. Thank you for introducing me to him.
Yeah, Dutch art historian. He was part of Dutch Libri. And I recently, a few years back, met his daughter, Marlene Hengelaar. When I started hearing, he passed away the year before I got to Libri, in 1977. And when I started listening to his lectures, I was like, oh, this guy really understood what was happening. Because he had been doing serious, serious work on the nature of art and why art had changed so much. But he immediately took it back to why, the deeper issues in the culture. I regretted, like, oh, couldn't you have waited a couple of years so I could have met you?
Come on, how inconsiderate of you dying before I got to you.
Yeah. Well, I received a really great word from his late wife, Anke Rookmacher. And she passed on a word through some friends at Libri saying they'd heard about what I was doing. I have a very, very large record collection. You can't see it now. In fact, if you look out my window, there's a Russian church behind me here. I have an extraordinarily large music collection. And one of the things I have to do is figure out how to get it here, because I've moved lock, stock, and barrel here. But I have all my stuff in storage in Alaska. But I mean, I have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of records, because I've been really studying these things. And I did not want to come up with some cheap conclusion about what had happened. I was following my friend John Sandry as far as discipline and not coming up with a cheap thing, but I was following Rookmacher as far as following the trail he had laid down. And one of the things he did was also introduce me to the works of Hermann Dooyeweerd. Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Familiar?
You can't go to Calvin College and not know who Dooyeweerd is.
Sure. Well, you know, the thing, though, is that I see a relationship between Dooyeweerd's ideas of modalities, mm-hmm. and that there's these different aspects of life. And for something to be true, it can't just answer, for instance, the mathematical issues of life or the economic. It has to answer everyone.
Right.
And Peterson talks exactly about those kinds of things.
Yep.
You know,
I haven't mentioned Dooyeweerd at all, but
yeah, exactly. It's time to get
built into me. He's like God number one in my Dutch Calvinist CRC Calvin College upbringing. He's in there.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing, is that Dooyeweerd then opened the, not Dooyeweerd, Rookmacher opened the door, along with other people at Swiss Libri, who understood the relationship between what Schaeffer was doing and Kuyper and the Dutch Calvinists.
Yep.
A whole door there that it was just like completely opaque to people outside of the CRC. if you weren't of Dutch extraction, you didn't know much about these people in America, unless you were connected with some weird branch of Presbyterianism and Reformed churches that actually saw that stuff going on. And so I got exposed to that world, which connected, you know, your Christian faith with a living, breathing world in which all this stuff was going crazy, and how do we interact with it? And it wasn't just me and Jesus and the gospel. It wasn't just pietism, you know?
Yep.
One of the things I came to realize over the years was how much pietism had really corrupted Christianity in America. Mm-hmm. You know, the me and Jesus, what a friend we have in Jesus stuff.
Yep.
You know, he walks with me and he talks with me. And he
tells God number two, not enough God number one.
Yeah. But I also discovered people like Jacques Ellul.
Yep.
And Jacques Ellul, French Reformed Christian, kind of hard to pin down because he really was his own thinker. He was as a youth a Marxist and then became converted to Reformed, a kind of a loose version of French version, so it's got to be this, of Reformed Christianity. But his work on technology, I read that in the 80s. I wish I'd read it sooner, especially his work on propaganda. And that's one of the things that I think has been missing from the conversations, is Ellul's work on propaganda. Because what Ellul basically says is, pretty much everything done through mass communication has a propagandistic aspect to it.
Yep.
And the propaganda is different than me and you having a discussion and arguing and saying, well, you say this, I say this. Propaganda is when the argument becomes predictable. Propaganda is when you take sides. There's an us and a them, and they're always wrong, and we're usually not. Whereas my feeling is it goes back to Solzhenitsyn, he says, no, you got to look at yourself. And if you look close enough, you're going to see where you are really, you really have problems. Yeah. And so, no, Ellul's books on technology and such. This is one of the things that was just like, I've noticed this with Jordan Peterson, especially he really over relied on Twitter for a while. And I think he really came to regret that because Twitter is such a hot box for propaganda because everyone's passing their stuff around and it's just trash, Yep. And after a while it's just us and them who people get blown out of shape.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons why I didn't, I've never had been on Twitter because I looked at that and I said, what can you say in a few characters? And nothing. Yep. Any good conversation takes a long time.
Yeah.
It takes, more than one session.
Yes.
Jacques Ellul's work has been really crucial. And there have been other people. Paul Virilio was a French writer who came after Ellul, Catholic Christian, only died in, I think, around October or November last year. And but his work is all about what he calls the accident. And the accident is, he says, when we invented the cars, we also invented the car accident. Every bit of technology we invent, we also invent. Like, for instance, no one thought about all the issues related to the automobile when they first made them. But suddenly they start to exist, And he has all these things. He has these great phrases like the information bomb. it's like a bomb that's literally gone off. And and his work has been really influential in my thinking and so you can see this, and there's lots more, but Walker Percy, I don't know if you've spent any time.
Oh yeah, I love Percy.
Walker Percy's great. Just so many interesting thinkers out there, not to mention the usual Christian suspects like Lewis and Chesterton and all the other people who are on everyone's shelves and such. Yeah. Who is a Christian. But my thing was, when I was in New York City, I lived in New York City for like 16 years, and I was digging into this music history stuff, cultural history. And I got to a point where I was around performance artists and people in punk bands who were like painting themselves blue and cracking eggs over their naked bodies on stage. This weird, it's just like, and I looked around me and I didn't see one Christian. I said, there was a whole world of strange people doing strange things. And these people walked by churches, but the churches did not connect to these people at all.
Right, right.
And what those people were starting to come up with, particularly in the 90s, is it eventually was just as the New Age movement comes out of the hippie movement, and the hippie movement was like wild and strange, but the New Age movement was just like tame as anything, and yet very monolithic within itself. So the weird alternative culture of the early 1990s, late 80s, early 1990s, is now our political correctness. It's now our social justice warriors. It's now our intersectional feminists. All of that stuff was being brewed at that time, but now it rules the roost. And so I started getting, I noticed Peterson, shortly after, not immediately upon, but shortly after the whole Bill C-16 thing, probably within a month. I was at that point, I remember I was at LaBrie in 2016, and there was some issue with some girls there. And one of the girls just turned to me and said, well, you're just a cis, you're a cis male, you wouldn't understand. And I said to myself, cis, I'd heard the word before, but then I said, okay, we got some stuff I got to dig into here. And I'd already been working on, I did a lecture, which really, I'm eventually going to put a version of it on YouTube. And this one really, it stirred up the people at LaBrie, and it was called Conceptual Humanity. And it was all about how having lost, you know, if we're not made in the image of God, if there's no natural reason for being human, then you can define yourself any way you want, and which is precisely what has happened. That's right. And so what I did is I took it from people imitating their favorite rock stars down through all sorts of issues about identity, including the whole thing where people, you know, it's not just like, I feel like I was born a woman. It's like, I feel I was born to be amputated. That there's a whole movement like that. BIID it's called. Yep. And then I went all the way down to robots. And the whole relationship, weird relationship people are having with robots that is starting to appear. The phrase robosexual has even been used. I'm serious. So, but when I did this, I was showing, I was just showing chapter and verse of how these things were changing. And everyone was just kind of like these LaBrie students who, you know, they're just like normal. Not all younger, some of them were older, which is great. The great thing about LaBrie is people go there and some of them are like 20, a lot of them are like 25, 30, and some of them are 60 and they're students. So yeah. That's great. And but no, when I showed this, everyone was kind of like, and it was at that time, I've already found these, there's certain people at that time who were already, you know, like infected with this social justice virus and all the other stuff that goes with it. So then I came back home from that trip and said, time to buckle down and figure out what the heck is going on. And it was at a certain point in when I discovered Peterson, I had already discovered the people related to Gamergate. And I discovered, and in a sense, I started seeing like there were two sides. One side were these people who were really sensitive. It's just like, oh my goodness, you offended me. You said something I disagree with. And the other side was people who mock them because they were so easy to mock.
They're emotional burn victims, and you just, certain kinds of people like me just have to kind of go, does that hurt? Does that hurt? That's
Yeah, I've heard the phrase recently, emotional incontinence. The more I started diving into this world, the more I started asking myself questions. Then I saw an interview with Peterson. I think it was Sargon of Akkad interviewed Peterson, and I thought at first Peterson was like, who's this guy? Is he going to be another guy who's just mocking people and stuff? And I go, no, this guy seems to be intelligent. And that was my first thought as I started watching the thing. And then I said, and after by the time I was done with the interview, I said like, huh, this guy's pretty interesting. And I mean, Sargon of Akkad, Carl Benjamin, is an atheist. Yeah. He didn't really dig too much into the religious side of questions, but I could just tell Peterson was a different sort of figure.
Yeah.
So then, within a month or two, or three or four, I had downloaded like every biblical lecture. I just said, okay, we're diving in.
Yep, yep.
And then I started passing it around to friends in Alaska and otherwise saying like, listen to this guy. And the interesting thing is I found out I could do it with both Christians and non-Christians.
Yes.
And that was really interesting. And I began to see Francis Schaeffer uses a word, co-belligerent. He used to use this word to describe people who were fighting the same things we were, but were coming from a different perspective. And to me, Peterson exactly fits this. When someone asked me, what do you think he believes? I said, I think he's some kind of Christian. I can't define it. I don't know if he can define it.
Yeah.
But he's certainly within the box. Yeah. But yeah. He's right on the edges, too.
Yeah.
And he has the ability to go in and out of those edges.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him unique, because it's clear to me the church, by and large, with the exception of a few people like Tim Keller, does not have the ability to escape the ghetto, the Christian ghetto.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And that, no, that's exact. And that to me is, I mean, I've been in Christian ministry now my whole life, and I,
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah. Well, at some point I said to myself, hey, I wonder if there are any Christians who are getting this. And then I found your videos. And the thing is, I think you were one of the first people I saw as a Christian who actually got that it wasn't so much that Peterson was an evangelist or anything, as much as he was creating the conditions of something that hadn't existed for, well, at least a long time that anyone could see, or maybe never existed before.
Yeah.
That we are in a new zone as a result.
Yeah.
He's as close to the center of what's going on right now. I don't have a name for it. It's a crisis in many ways.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, look at the people who are talking to each other. Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's what's interesting is that all those people who used to argue with each other in the later part of the 20th century are now, because of this new thing, have been pushed together. And now they're talking to each other the way they should have talked in the late 20th century.
Yes.
More openly.
Yes.
You know, so that you could ask questions like, why do you think you're gay? You know, instead of saying, how dare you?
Yes.
You know, now there are people who will tolerate that question over there.
Yes.
You know?
Right, right.
And there are people who, you know, Christians who will go like, yeah, we've made a mess of things. and I find it fascinating that it's kind of like, well, you're probably familiar with Oz Guinness.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and he's been talking for years about the need for a new public square.
Yes.
And I think something like that is forming. And I throw him in here because among the Christian speakers, he's been one of the few who's really tried to engage with the larger culture.
Yeah.
I'd even hear him occasionally interviewed on NPR for a Christian opinion, which I thought, well, that's pretty good of them to interview him. But we're in a place now we've never been before. And it could go either way. We're not, you know, just because a bunch of people are saying, we should talk. We need free speech. We need all of these things. Yeah, at the same time, what's going on in England right now, they're just losing free speech right and left.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on with the European Union? I mean, just today I heard that the French had sent the Internet Archives a kind of cease and desist order for all these pages that they wanted taken out because they said they might have or might inspire terrorist content, or they were discussions of terrorism. Yeah. So we're in this place where it's really strange that, you know, it's just this pressure and this emotional incontinence, people are just like, oh my God. But what it is they're all feeding off of propaganda. And that's why that's what propaganda does to your brains, is it turns it into this. What I say is, if you want to know where you are propagandized, because we're all propagandized, it's where you find your knee-jerk reaction inside.
Yeah.
When you hear just a certain word, if the word abortion or gay or whatever sets you off, doesn't matter if it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
It matters that you're set off by it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I've been, the kind of stuff I've been working on for a while and trying to understand. I mean, more and more I say to myself, you know what we need? We just need some reality. We need to back off from the entertainment and to, you know, one of the problems is it's like younger people today, they don't read books about reality anymore. They read fiction, they read fantasy, they read horror. I love horror, but still, you know, they're in, they're world building on, you know, on their MMORPG or whatever, their, you know, their role-playing games, yeah. Online. They are, you know, essentially they're in a place. So how can they do anything in the world? It is interesting though, that the Gamergate thing was created by essentially gamers, but even someone like PewDiePie, I've watched him because I started noticing him and I said, you know, he's more important than I've given him credit for. Hmm. And the reason is because he's just this guy. He has now over 90 million subscribers. And yet he's kind of like a loose cannon and accidentally shoots his mouth off. But when push comes to shove, for instance, he did a review of the 12 Rules for Life.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And he near the end, he says, oh, wait a minute. He's like religious. Oh, I don't know if I would have read this if I'd known that. Yeah, yeah. But he's honest about, yeah. You know, he said earlier last year, he said, I'm going to try to read, you know, and it's almost like he's probably approaching, you know, late 20s, almost 30 kind of. Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're seeing a whole delayed generation.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know what happens when you mature is you start reading serious books.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
What we were, you were probably doing when we were 20 or
right.
17. Well,
you started in school actually reading serious.
Yes, books. Exactly.
To a decent right. school.
Yes.
And I mean, this is one of the first, probably the third video I had seen of Peterson's was a conversation he had at Harvard where he basically
right.
made a plea
I know that one.
To for would the school please have students read the classics? And you and I would think I was like, yes, please, because I did in my education, but some of my kids have not gone to Calvin College. And
right.
when I look at the curriculum they're studying, it's like they're going to give you a BA and you really don't know who Plato is.
Exactly.
And it's like that school, that the, right. the accrediting people should be putting fire on that school and say, we're right. going to yank your accreditation unless
right.
you know everyone who passes through your doors doesn't at least have a basic understanding of Plato, Socrates, Aristotle.
Oh, exactly.
Something decent. They got yeah. out of 4 years and they read nothing.
Right. And
I'm sorry, no accreditation for you.
Right.
And yeah. So that was the third video yeah. I heard of that. Yeah. And I thought, all right, I'm in. I'm yeah. going to hear more.
Yeah, exactly. There was a history teacher, a history scholar named Oscar Hanlon. He was Jewish. I read a book by him about 1980 called Truth in History. And it was very interesting. It was like, how do we get to the truth in history? And he comes near the end and he really takes the Judeo-Christian position on truth. And he comes to the end and he says, these new disciplines, and he was talking about Black history, women's history, you know, gay history and such, they're going to ruin us. He said, not because they're, you know, they're being taught, but because they want to change the nature of what we know to be valuable.
Yes.
You know, and they also will change the quest for truth to move it into the whatever they really want to see as the answer. And he says, and whenever you do that, you cannot find the truth. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Now at that time the book came out without a peep. You know, I'm sure there were 25 of us who read that book, you know. But, you know, he was exactly right. This is where we are. And these things had happened by the end of the 80s. I mean, Camille Paglia was already kind of talking about these things in the 90s. And they thought they had won the war in the 90s against the political correctness. What they didn't realize was they hadn't at all. That these people all got tenured positions in universities. And that's where they ended up. But for myself, I just have said, I've taken a very different position because my understanding of the modern era is that there was always something we were going back to. So in the Renaissance, we're going back to the classical world and we were getting inspiration and bringing it back. By the time you get to say, I think the Protestant Reformation was actually going back to the Old Testament Jewish world and bringing that back. And then I think that, you know, you get to...
Calvin was.
Yeah. But there was a sense of trying to bring this... It wasn't exactly the same by the time they brought it.
Right.
But it was something of inspiration. So there was neoclassicism, or romanticism was going back to the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
You know, and you keep seeing these leapfrogs back. Yeah. And by the time you get to the 60s, you've got the hippies going back to the cowboys and Indians era, although they were more in favor of the Indians. You had them going back to the 1930s and 20s. There was a lot of songs that were kind of being revived from then. And then by the time you get to the late 80s, they're almost at the point where they're swallowing their own tail. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, what would happen was whenever something would get rediscovered, so like there was a rockabilly revival or something like that, mm-hmm. then once that was over, it would disappear from mass consciousness. The second time mm-hmm. would disappear. It would just be like, now we don't go back to, you know, so many people don't really go back to these past eras for inspiration. But each time, and I got to the point where I realized it was like the Ouroboros, the snake swallowing its mm-hmm. tail. That's where we are now. We finally got to the point where it's just this total feedback loop. Mm-hmm. And now it's no longer about music or film mm-hmm. or art or what these ideas are doing. Rather, now it's just like, it's just now. Oh, I've got a new message now.
Who said that by such and such a date, all television will be pornography? And it's it's like that person was correct, but it's not about sex. It's just porn. There might be no sex involved, but it's all just pornography. It's just the constant feedback loop, the little stimulus hit by, I got a like, I got a retweet, I got a, you know,
right.
a new movie. Exactly. And it's not all even sex, it's just responses. Porn.
It's all Pavlovian response.
Yes.
It's like, I got to check. You know, the classic image is of a family is sitting in a restaurant, like a Denny's or something, and the mother and father are eating there, and the younger daughter or son is sitting there just like, you know, scrolling away and stuff, but chatting with someone else. But here's the truth. Were the person that they were chatting with there, they would be talking to someone else. It has nothing to do with the person.
That's right.
But in this, as the feedback loop got shorter and shorter, and I realized there was this black zone of all this stuff that people no longer paid attention to, I got really happy because I said, oh, great, that's all mine now. I can go back and I can mine and I can dig and I don't have to be a modernist anymore, you know, doing the revivals. Yeah. I can dig for myself.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done. You know, it's just, and that's what I would recommend to anyone. It's like, look, the past is now open because no one cares about it anymore.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's like a junkyard.
Yes,
Go back and dig things up and strengthen the things that remain and find discoveries and, you know. Yes.
There's no line there. You don't have to wait. You don't have to. It's going to cost you nothing. It's all there for free. Have at it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's what I've been doing is trying to – and I've been working on my ideas to try to make them more and more solid. So at a certain point, I started doing the Anadromous Life. I've got another site, too, called Gravity from Above, which is more about my puppet philosophy ideas. But the Anadromous Life is more for just ideas. And so there's all sorts of strange stuff that I put. And whenever I write, I don't think about writing something for the moment. I think about, I'm inspired by the moment, but let's write something that people, you know, if someone finds this in 10 years, it'll still be relevant. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'll put those links in our talk so people can find it. We've got a little less than 10 minutes yet.
Fine.
So what do we want to grab onto?
What do you want to grab onto? What have you heard that you've been...
So tell me
your life story.
No, we'll have to get to that some other time because it's a very interesting story. Tell me... In a few minutes, why Peterson is important and where you think it's going.
Peterson is important. Like I say, I think he is a lightning rod. He is a something that brings people and opens a door. It is a door to the past. Mm-hmm. I do have my problems with Peterson. I read Jung before I heard of Peterson, so I wasn't surprised. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is if he was just a Jungian, we'd be in a lot more trouble. But because Jung's idea of God gets pretty wishy-washy, pretty waffly. Mm-hmm. And but
I agree with you 100%. He isn't just a Jungian.
Saves him is Solzhenitsyn and Dostoevsky. And both of them are Christians.
Yeah.
And both of them are hardcore trying to understand reality.
Yeah.
And I think those are the poles. That's why Solzhenitsyn is so important. And he's brought Solzhenitsyn back from the dead.
Yes, yes.
That's another really important thing, because now his books are starting to sell again. They couldn't give them away 10 years ago. I'm serious.
You're right.
They were not going to publish the rest of The Red Wheel, which is this massive tome. They put the first two out, and then they realized he was politically incorrect, and they were kind of like, we don't want to deal with this. He used to be a darling until he came to America and criticized us.
Well, and I think that, to the points that you've been making, Solzhenitsyn is so helpful because he had zero toleration for our pornography. He looked at America, and Americans were all self-congratulatory because, you know, here we didn't bow to the Soviets.
That's how good we are.
Yeah. And he's like, and Americans are like, why aren't you celebrating us? And he's like, what's to celebrate, really?
Right.
You're slaves to your appetites. That's all you are. And you're so filthy rich, you manage to have enough that you can do it your whole life long and waste your entire life.
Right.
And America's like, well, we invited you here for that. And he's like, I don't care. I'll go back as soon as I can.
He also dared to criticize the academic left.
Yeah.
You know, that was a real problem. So, but no, Peterson, I mean, I'm really following him because, you know, it's amazing to see, like, you know, the whole Liberty University thing.
Yes.
That was really fascinating. I really appreciated your play-by-play on that. You know, it's just like, you know, Peterson goes in for the touchdown, you know, but no, what was amazing, I think, and you really pointed this out, was the emotional response he was getting from the whole thing. And it was really, I mean, I felt it when they were starting to pray for him, when Nasser was starting to pray for him and putting his hands on him. And you just see Peterson just kind of like in this zone. But you can also see, and what was the prayer for? That he wouldn't make a fatal error.
Well, it wasn't even that he wouldn't make a fatal error. It's that
the
fatal error that he will make won't destroy him.
Right.
That's what he asked for, which is very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I think he's wise enough to know that, you know, if you go through my ideas, your ideas, or anybody's ideas, you blow them out of shape.
Yeah.
The bigger they get, the more they expose the faults.
Yeah.
The more people believe your ideas or my ideas or anybody's ideas. I mean, you know, see Adolf Hitler. You know, by himself, he was a little crank who was kind of upset with the Jews, who were probably his patrons when he was doing house painting in you know, Austria. But when he got bigger and bigger, and then suddenly it's like the world was his ideas. And you can see what happens when you blow up somebody's ideas to gigantic size. And that's what's happening to Peterson.
Yeah.
And I am sure he's wise enough to know what, you know, it's just like, I have to keep doing this, but, you know, I actually do think that the church is going to have a bit of a fallout, both good and bad. Yeah. That is to say, we're going to have to deal with people who, I mean, there are all sorts of questions here about evolution you know, what happens when people come into the church who have this God, you know, just like, I no longer am an atheist, but now it's just like the transcendent. Well, yeah. And let's put some more meat on the bone here. You know, let's get it down to earth and talk about how we actually live. But like I say, you know, it's just like, I have a lot of ideas. I have the feeling if they got pumped up, you know, something would start to like, you know, they just get too heavy. So, I find it fascinating, utterly fascinating. The question is, where will it go? And I don't think anybody, including Peterson, has the slightest idea. I do see signs of him being like, you know, create, you know, CAA, come with me. Yep. We will help you find the bigger and better ways to communicate with people.
I want to talk to more people. We'll make you rich. All of this we will give you. But at some point, they're going to say, Jordan, you have to stop talking about this.
Right.
That's, exactly. I mean, and you get that with Jesus. I mean, Jesus gets, you know, John 6, he famously gets to the point, and, you know, unless you eat my body and drink my blood, and everyone's like, eh!
Right. What are you talking about?
The Galilean heyday comes to an end.
You just went over the line there on that one.
That's right.
Bread of life stuff, you know, drink my blood. What are you talking about, buddy?
Yep.
You know? And, I think we haven't quite hit the peak yet. I think we're still climbing with the Peterson experience.
Yeah.
And what I'm hoping is as we do go with him, in a sense, that this other thing that's going on, this maybe new public square would be the best way to describe it, would be taking its place. That would be my best hope. It's just like your experiences of talking with people at your meetups. What's going on with that, you know? And you and I both know very well what goes on in churches.
Yes.
It ain't that. You know? I mean...
You're exactly right. And there's a couple of people in my meetups, when they hear this, they are going to be screaming, yes!
We're right on the reason why there aren't that many men, young men in particular, in churches.
Yes.
Because young men want to talk about ideas.
Yes.
I think young women do too.
Yes.
But young men in particular are not given a place in church. So it becomes like another sensitive, I hate to say it, female zone. I'm not against women at all. But it gets quarantined. Jacques Ellul has a really great, maybe this will be a good place to end. Jacques Ellul has a very great talk about how he started a church in the small town, started a Reformed church. And what they did was they had house meetings. And he said, these were the best experiences of my life. People would bring food over. We would talk. The conversation was rich. You know, people were there. They were, and men were coming, workers from the village and such. And then they started saying, well, we need a building. So the men said, we're there. We'll help you. And so they got together. They built a building. And as soon as the building was done, the men disappeared. And that says a lot.
Yes.
You know, it's because something changed at that point. Yeah. And it's not that the building is bad. It's that something in the dynamic changed. Yeah. And I saw something similar in the Jesus People movement. The earliest time of the Jesus People movement was amazing. You know, and then the more they became part of the mainstream Christian structure, the more it lost all the elements that made it interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So... But I'm hoping that something in this Petersonian moment is bringing us back to conversation, dialogue, and especially to reality as questioned by Hans Ruckmacher. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we need in our times. Touch things again, to have real human conversation. It's just like, this is great. I'm glad I'm getting to know you. I have no illusion that I really know you. I mean, we know each other a little bit through this.
Yep.
Something gets through.
Yep.
But the reality, something doesn't.
Yep. Yep.
No.
Yep. And you know, again, part of what happens in church is, well, you've always got that dynamic. You know this.
Oh, sure.
Slice. But to go back to Dooyeweerd, it's
all
of the layers have to. They're all there, so they have to. If you want to really know, it's got to be the whole thing.
Right. Paul, why don't you see how many people will click like if you just say, you know, Dooyeweerd. No Peterson, no interview with whatever. No,
you don't understand what that word sets off at a place like Calvin College.
It's I know.
Walk into it to say Doivert and whoosh. Although that was 30 years ago. Today, probably more would say who?
Who? Exactly. But yeah.
This has been a pleasure. We will have to talk again.
Yeah, we will talk again. I still haven't told you at all what I'm doing really in Georgia, why I came here, which has to do with reality entirely.
Well,
and
I very much
there's also the history part. So we got lots more to talk about. I had the feeling we would. I just from watching, I said, yeah, I gotta get in touch with them.
Yeah, we will.
So Paul,
I'll put your links here, and so people can start to poke around at your stuff, and we will
again. If you want, I'll put them on Facebook so you have the official version. But if you found them already.
Do that. Go ahead and put them on Facebook and I'll find them there.
Okay, great.
Thank you. We will talk again.
We'll talk again. Bye.